Welcome back to another episode of In the Drink. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. When I'm not hosting In the Drink, you can find me at Fausto or Lalu, which I own and operate here in Brooklyn, New York. I'm super excited about today's episode. On the show today, we have Luca Corrado. Luca is the winemaker of the Vietti Winery, which is an historic winery in the Piedmont region of Italy. They craft some of the most beautiful, elegant expressions of Barolo, and we have a true legend on the show today. I'm really excited, and here it is. I'd love for you to tell me about your new project with the Timorasso.
We are so excited about the Timorasso. But apologize for my English that is not so good. But Timorasso is a fantastic experience. So I think we are making Timorasso also thanks to my wife, Elena, that she loved so much this wine, even before me. And she pushed us so much to get into this new experience. So first of all, Vietti, my family, we always worked and we only worked with indigenous grape variety, because I think every variety in Italy, in Europe, they have its own homeland, you know. So because a grape arrived in Europe through Puglia from the Greek, the Romans, they transport the grape all around Europe, and they were planting vineyard filled with many different grape variety, and then every grape variety choose the place where to be, you know, like a Chardonnay became endemic in Burgundy, Pinot Noir became endemic in Burgundy, Riesling in Germany, Gruner Veltliner in Austria, Nebbiolo in Piemonte. So in one way, this is a kind of, and this was 2000 years ago, and this is in one way a rule very important that sometimes we forget, but we should respect, because, you know, we could do maybe in Piemonte a good Chardonnay or good Riesling, but for me, always will be like a fake Rolex, you know, from far away, it look like, but always will be a fake Rolex. And so in Italy, there are so many indigenous grape varieties. Many they disappeared. And according an example with the Jan D'Agata book, if you read his book, he said that...
The native wine grapes.
Beautiful, yes, book. Beautiful. And he said that there are more than 450 Italian grape variety, and 100 grape variety, they disappeared in Italy in the last 100 of years. And for several reasons. But Italy is the land of the biodiversity. And so for red, absolutely is fantastic, also for white. But very rarely we have an indigenous, an autochthon Italian grape variety with a characteristic of ageability. Because if you think, we were mentioning today the Trebbiano is fantastic wine. Trebbiano is also thanks to some fantastic producer that he became a wine for aging. But if not, many times are more simple grape variety. So very, 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 very few Italian white grape variety, they have this beautiful attitude of aging. And Timorasso is one of these. It's a variety that in the medieval time was one of the most important wine, not only from Piemonte, but from Italy. In the medieval time, there was more vineyard in Tortona. This is a region between Alba, Lange, direction to Milano. The main city is Tortona. An example was one of the most exported white wine in the 1800s in Germany, in Switzerland. And it was known to be a white wine already for long ageability. Like I was saying today, the Fillossera wiped out the entire production in Europe. And many regions, they've been replanted. Other regions where other agricultural activity, they were more profitable. Here in Tortona was the cultivation of fruit, like peaches. Still today, very profitable, very famous, the peaches from that region. farmer. They were making more money with peaches than vines, and so they were planting peaches. So really almost disappeared this grape variety until the late 80s, where some producer, they brought back this ancient grape variety. They tried to multiply it, and they brought back to the attention of the world this wine. And
Walter Massa is
one of the first, Poggio Muti, other, followed by Colombera, by many others. I think today there are 18 producers, something like this, for 75 hectares planted.
Do you know how they found these grapes? Were they in a nursery? Were they at a farmer?
In the bush.
In the bush.
See, in the, maybe some vines that they survive to the phylloxera, or maybe some few growers that they continue to make, probably for personal consumption, you know. So actually no nursery, because still today, and one of the reasons I think I'm very positive about this wine and this grape, because today is a fantastic wine, but there is still a lot of thing to do in terms of viticulture, selection of clones, winemaking. And so if it's good now, I could not imagine how it will be in the future.
Yeah. What is it like for you to work with a grape that maybe has this ancient historic roots, but is really new to being studied, versus Nebbiolo, which so many people have studied for so long, and I know you've worked with university on it. Yeah.
The fact is that, you know, at the end of the story, we are growers. In Piemonte, let's say we are more sophisticated growers. And the fact that one thing that we miss if we love to be a grower, if we like our land, is the sense of adventure. Because in Piemonte, in the Barolo, there is nothing to be invented. Map, vineyard, history, Grand Cru. So everything is there. You know, you need to respect the terroir, but there is not dramatically changing to do in this moment. Thanks God. So this pioneering sense of going in a region where there is something to develop, where the material to do is fantastic, where the potentiality are amazing, this is the reason why today is attracting so many, many, many producers from Barolo region going there for this. Because it's like to go, when you travel there, it's like to be, to see Langa in the 70s, where there was some vineyards, some peaches, some land, some forest, farmer that really looks like a farmer, that are not going around with Range Rover, but they go around with broken cars, where everything is more simple and genuine. Plus the potentiality of a grape variety and a wine as the Dertona, that could be, you know, we say the white Barolo, but really a white wine that would have a long ageability and long potentiality. So this has all the component to become an important wine.
I'm sure it doesn't hurt that the vineyard land costs are much lower than in Barolo also.
Yes, for sure. This is, but the fact that what is very interesting, and one of the reasons why I agree also on this project, because, you know, my family has quite of a history of rescue some variety, because my father rescued the Arnaise in 67 from the extinction. And we are very happy, very proud. But today, Arnaise became very big. So 13 million of baht or something like this is huge. So we are very happy, very proud. But probably the story to this time, we want to do differently. So with this group of producers of Dertona, the really idea is to make this wine like the Hermitage Blanc, you know, like some niche wine. So the idea is to limitate the production at 200 hectares, so 450 acres, more or less, and make something of special. So we don't want to have, for this reason, so we block the door to big winery that they wanted to make as a commercial wine. But we wanted to have growers, we wanted to have quality winery that they wanted to make really a special wine. And so this is the reason. So we wanted to write the story with experience that we had in the past in the better way.
That's great. And did you purchase a vineyard in the area? Is that what you did?
So we purchased 7 hectares, so 16 acres, more or less. And this is it. This is what we want to do. Also, thanks to Walter Massa, another producer. Walter actually helped us so much. And he was so kind, also an example to help us to buy this property that is in the middle of his crew, so between Costa del Vento and if I think the other one is Monte Citorio, because it was from a farmer that for several reasons he could not buy that land, and he preferred that we buy instead than another. So potentiality. He helped us not to make a mistake, let's say. Also, many other producers, I have to say, they've been so welcome to us. I think the community there is fantastic. So we plan. The idea is to make, 12,000 bottles, 1,000 cases of Wandertona, and maybe 3,000 bottles of Crudertona, because Timorasso is the grape variety, Dertona is the wine. It's like a Nebbiolo. Is the grape, and Barolo is the wine. This is the...
And Dertona from Tortona.
Tortona.
Colli Tortonesi is...
Is the DOC.
Is the DOC.
Exactly. And another thing that is fantastic, that he make me crazy when I was there, is because I think maybe some of you knows that when people, they describe a Barolo region, they geologically, they talk about two very distinct periods. One called Tortonian, and the other is Helvetian. So different timing. One more younger, one more older. And when I was there the first time, I said, oh, shit, this is unbelievable. Because, it looks like to be home. And I see the quality of the soil and everything. Then I started to do some research and being more interested. And then I understood why the main city there is Tortona. And the reason why... is because historically the scientists, they defined the Tortonian from Tortona, because so geologically that land, that quality of soil is exactly the Langa soil. Different climate, a little bit different, but the quality of the soil is that, is the same. And that is was for me was like a shock.
Mind opening.
Yes.
And you say the producers of Timorasso that I've known are mostly producers who are based in that area, like with Walter Massa and Colombera. But you said there's a few producers who are now from Barolo investing in that area.
See, I think
as well.
Before us was Roagna, then Borgogno. Then after us, I know there is Odero, now Rivetti.
At this point, the 200 hectares, are they fully committed, or can people get in?
No. Now there are 75 yes. People are planting, and I think the idea is to limit when we will arrive at 200 hectares. That will be will stop. Yes, but it's very good that. So the fact also that we see more and more Barolo colleagues arriving in the region means that we did not a stupid thing.
I think it's amazing. I was a great Barolo producer here and spent half the time speaking about the new wine.
It's because it's beauty is exciting. Exciting thing. And I think also is a category of wine that I really suggest you to try, because it's amazing.
Yeah, I had the chance to taste it at the tasting today, and I can say it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations. Today's episode is brought to you by Melio, a digital payables platform made just for small businesses. If you're a small business and you deal with a bunch of different vendors, as I know I do at my restaurants, sometimes it can be hard to keep track of a ton of different invoices, all with different pay-by dates and different terms. Melio is one simple platform that allows you to centralize all of your invoices and pay them on a timely manner, making sure that you're never late for a payment, or sometimes even worse, pay too early. With Melio, sending payments and even requesting them is made simple and easy, and can be done all in one local place. Visit gomelio.com and add your first bill to get started. I also do want to talk about the two new vineyard acquisitions that you made with Cerequio and Monviliero. I know it's just notoriously difficult to purchase new vineyards in the Barolo region. Can you tell us how those two vineyard acquisitions came about?
Yes, this is summer, because an example, we also had in Barbaresco this year, we've been able to buy a vineyard of Rabaia. Roncaglia. I have to say it's not something that you find under the stone, you know. It's a matter of relationship. Our project, some of these projects are it's 10 years that we are working behind, and some of them they really come through, I think, for a good karma, you know. I trust in the karma, and I think that you, if you put good seeds in the soil, it will come back good fruit later on. So I think that some of them, they really came through relationship, people that we respect each other, friendship, and so was good thing. But for us, we are very exciting, because we already own, even if we are a very, very small estate, but what we already have a collection of Grand Cru, let's say, if we can use this French name, Grand Cru Vineyard, very interesting, as Rocca di Castiglione, Brunate, Ravera, Lazzarito, Villero as a Riserva, plus we have other that we use for the Castiglione, as Ginestra, Mosconi, Brico Boschis, Brico del Fiasco, then Brico delle Viole, Fossati, so many, many, many interesting.
You said more or less 16 of the 20 Grand Cru?
Sì, let's say there is this kind of an unofficial classification, but if you read all the book from Vinos, Parker, Gambero Rosso, Slow Food, they always like to make this classification of 20. Actually, there was last year, a very interesting article on the Wine Searcher about, you know, this, more or less we consider 20, you know, like this crew superior, let's say, than the other. And we've been lucky in the generation to collect at least 1 acre, 2 acre, 3 acre, half acre, one vines in the 16 of them. That is fantastic. And in the last few years, we've been able to add Cerequio, Cerequio in La Morra. That is a fantastic vineyard, because historically, since the medieval time and the late medieval time, this region, La Morra and Cerequio, was known, was owned by the church, if I remember well, and there are book on the church of vinification there, so was already known to be one of the best spot of the region. And I know, but I was very surprised, because when I made the first vinification, I know that I had in my hand a top player, let's say, but I was so much surprised how well he played.
Now, Cerequio is not a vineyard I know very well, mostly because the producers in that area make a more modern, sort of full-throated style than I normally go for, and more so than the wines that you make, which I think tend to be more elegant and more terroir-driven. What was it like to discover or to work with Cerequio?
Exactly. For me, it was also the same surprise, because... Yeah. Making as a little bit more close of my style, that is more traditional, more long maceration, and so I was not expecting, because the majority of the Cerequio, like you said correctly, on the market are maybe a little bit more French oak, more modern, more, that is fine with me, but different than what we do. And that was a fantastic surprise, because he performed better, much better than I was waiting for. So this is the reason why I think the terroir of Langa, the Grand Cru of Langa, are stronger than the stupid, I would say. You know, they allowed you to make a mistake. And so I think a Grand Cru, like I would say today, Grand Cru is not only Barolo region, everywhere where there is a classification of a Grand Cru. Grand Cru is not just a color that somebody throw on the map, you know, here and that. Here is yellow, it's a Grand Cru. No, Grand Cru is a vineyard that historically has a reason. And I think Cerequio historically has a long history. Then the constancy of quality, you know, on 20 years, 18 times is making fantastic fruit, and Cerequio, that is it. Plus, is a region where the quality of the fruit, whatever if you do think right, or maybe a little bit wrong, because, you know, we are human beings and we make a mistake every day, it makes a fantastic fruit. And the Cerequio is unbelievable for that.
How would you characterize it?
But it's very La Morra. So La Morra has this very darker fruit, and you see this very herbal personality, little bit of herbal personality, like some mint, interesting, some little bit balsamic. It was coming out, I think, right now we had 2018, so it's still in the Slavonian cask, it needs to be in the Slavonian cask for another year and a half. But I start to see a little bit of this balsamic personality coming out. It is very interesting. That I can see from some Cerequio of some my colleague. What I like a lot, that was in aspect of the great acidity, that normally I was thinking that that region had a much lower acidity. The tannin are very, very soft, so very generous, so very opulent, you know, like the Sofia Loren of the Barolo, but it's true, you know, very classy, with a lot of class, let's say.
And, they're very present, but not harsh.
No. It's not a Lazzarito from Serra Lunga. It's not for sure a Serra Lunga Barolo. Absolutely. It's more refined, no sandy tannin, very soft, very velvety, very smooth.
And then maybe in the opposite way, the most famous wine from Monviliero, from Fabio Alessandria at Berlotto, is one of the most elegant Barolo that's made.
But Monviliero is another fantastic story, because Monviliero, I consider Monviliero a Barolo from the hill of La Morra. La Morra makes always this Barolo more elegant, more perfumed. Is also the youngest geological soil, so from 6-8 million years ago. So recently young compared to the 12 million years ago of Serra Lunga. And for me, it was always very interesting also the fact that, because now we taste the wine, but another very fascinated part is tasting the grape. I love tasting the grape, because when I have one of the most difficult moments of in the viticulture is the harvest time, you know, how to decide the day of harvest. And then this is very complicated, because you know, you cannot go back, glue the grape and say, cacchio, I made mistake and I have to glue back. No. And it's a decision that you take with the stomach. You can do million of analysis, but at the end of the story, it's a decision to be taken and decision to be made, and you do with your stomach. So I taste a lot of fruit tasting, and I prefer to do with tasting that with the number and analysis. And even before I know I own this land, I was always tasting Monviliero, and I was fascinated from the reason why. When you chew the skin of Nebbiolo from Rocche of Castiglione, they come out very good tannin, very elegant tannin with good presence after 2-3 seconds that you chew. You chew the skin of the grape from Monviliero, 2, 3, 5, 10 times. And the tannin, where there are the tannin? Oh my God. So, and this was the reason why I think in the past, historically, Monviliero and Verduno was a region where, because the soil is like this, they use more to do fermentation with the whole cluster, so with stems, because it's a region where there is not too much tannin in the skin, so they like to add tannin maybe from the stems. And also because the soil is a little bit more dry and the stems are also a little bit less humid, less water, so they give something. And so 100 years ago, they were not stupid, let's say. But yes, when you do fermentation with the whole cluster, you play another game. It's a completely different game. So much more elegance, more finesse, incredible Burgundian, these fresh strawberry. You see today, you taste the 18 for me. It's disarmante, no? Disarmante, I don't know how to say in English. Is
disarming. Yeah.
Disarming.
Incredible.
That wine.
Anyway, you have to give more structure to the wines from there, whereas you have to manage the structure from further south in Barolo.
Yes. So it's exactly like this, because when we talk about Barolo, people say, it's a big wine. What is a big wine? Mm. I think if we have the concept of big wine as big Cabernet, Merlot, or Nero d'Avola, Barolo never will be a big wine. But big wine is the complexity, is the different layer, is the, you know, the different component, and is the powerful of the elegance for me. And when you taste a Monvigliero, an example, or some other Cru Barolo, tac, immediately you understand how Barolo can be a big wine without being oaky, darker in color, and gem wine.
Like some of your favorite wines in Burgundy, I imagine.
Yes.
That power without the weight.
Bravissimo. Right. This is what I like in the wine, you know, because weight, you know, is not necessarily something that is important in wine.
What's it like to work with so many different crews, with 16 different crews? Is it a big advantage? Is it very challenging?
It is very challenging.
I imagine.
Because the responsibility that we have on our shoulder is a lot. Then, now for me it's more than 30 harvest. So let's say I got a little bit some experience. And so I passed my time when I was more younger that I needed to prove something. Now, honestly, I don't care because it's like this. But the, you know, you realize when you have a vineyard like Cerecchio, like Lazzarito, that is known since the 1600 to be one of the best spots, like Rocca, that is an amazing vineyard. You realize that compare an example different than one time, you cannot be so arrogant and egocentric and stupid, sorry, to impose your ego, your style, or what you like also in a wine. Because, I don't know, let's say Lazzarito. Lazzarito is a vineyard that probably is known since 300 years to be one of the best spots of the Barolo region. I don't know who was making 100 years ago the winemaker in my family or whatever that he was making this wine. I don't know and I don't care. But I'm sure that when I will be dead, as many of my colleagues in 100 years, nobody will remember Luca, Roberto Conterno, Giacosa, whatever. But that vineyards, Lazzarito, Rocche, Brunate, Cascina Francia, Rocche del Falletto, they will continue to make a fantastic wine. So how you can be so arrogant and impose what you like and what you think instead to help the terroir to come up in the best way? So for me, this is with my error, absolutely, but this is my style. And this is what I try to do and what I trust.
This episode of In the Drink is sponsored by VS. For over 36 years, Vias has been a leading importer and distributor of some of Italy's finest wines. Their philosophy is quality, history, and transparency, and they think that wine should always have a story to tell and should always represent its terroir to the fullest. You know, I've been working with Vias at my restaurants for over 10 years, but I just found out what the acronym VIAS actually stands for, and I think it's pretty cool. It means Vitigni Italiani Autoctoni Selezionati, or Selected Italian Indigenous Grapes. So that means that the wines in their portfolio are wines made from native Italian grapes, and they're wines that clearly exhibit their terroir, local culture, and deep history. VS has over 76 unique brands imported to the U.S., including some of my favorites like the Produttori del Barbaresco, Berici, Salvioni, Castello di Rampola, and many others. So keep an eye out for that VS label on the back of a bottle of wine, because it's the mark that something uniquely delicious is inside. This episode of In the Drink is brought to you by 750.com. 750.com is the most important resource for beverage buyers. I use 750.com on a daily basis, not just because of the vast amount of products that are listed on the site. I mean, everything I could possibly want for my restaurants, Fausto and Lalu, are located on 750, but also because of how reliable that information is. For me, when I'm ordering something, I need to know that it's going to be there and the information on it is going to be accurate and true so that I can plan out my beverage program. So it's always so helpful to me to know that when I order something on 750, it's going to be the wine or the beer or the liquor that they say it's going to be there. It's the correct vintage. It's in stock. They know that it matters and makes a huge difference for buyers just like me and like you. So go to 750.com and open up an account today. Do you think that there should be Grand Crus and Premier Crus in the way like that you might find it in Burgundy written on the label? So you refer to it multiple times.
We will arrive. We will arrive.
So?
I think so because it's necessary. First of all, it's already there because we can see from price of the land. Okay. Because there are vineyards that they cost... some million of euro hectares, other that they cost one third, one quarter. And, you know, is already with that, you understand that there is different quality. Even if they are all MGA, all Cru vineyards, but there is a difference. So this type of classification is already made since a long time. There was already classification made by Vignolo Luttati that was an agronomist in the early of 1900. In 1907 was already made this classification. So it's not something that we have to invent right now. It's already existed. Then people, they did in the past. Ratti, the father of Pietro Ratti, did in the 70s. Other, they did. So existed already. And we can hide, but every time that you hide, it comes up again. So we just need to be honest with ourselves, and maybe some winery, they will lose something, some other, they will gain something, but this is the truth, and this is not because Luca wants, because Mother Nature wants.
I know the climate's quite different from how it was in the 70s, and I imagine at that time, some of the greatest crews were the ones that had the most sun exposure, that were easiest to ripen grapes. Do you think that maybe some of the Grand Crus that we're thinking of maybe are too warm for the way the climate is today, or will they still maintain their greatness and people just can adapt with vineyard practices?
You are 100% right. This is something that is not happening only in Barolo, but it's the same thing as a Burgundy, where exists already classification and is more evident there because there are some Premier Cru, some probably even better than some Grand Cru. This climate changing is mixing little bit the card of that in the Barolo also. And one example more than any others is Ravera di Novello. Ravera di Novello, that is a vineyard, one of the higher altitude, that face the mountains, look the mountains, so the influence of the glacier or the cold air coming from the mountain is the first place the cold air when it's arriving from the mountain touch the Langa is arriving. Compared to other vineyards that are in the horseshoe, lower altitude, in the other side, protected by the hills of Barolo. You know, there are some vineyards that they are 15 days of difference in bud break from Ravera. Ravera sometimes is 15 days later than that. And when we purchased that vineyard in the 90s, it was known to be a good vineyard of Barolo, very, very good, but in some vintages was extraordinary, in some vintages was too cold. And now, probably down there are the same temperature, climate condition that in the 60s, in the 50s, they were in some more celebrated crew in the horseshoe of the Barolo. It's true. There is an evolution, but this is normal in everything.
So are the biggest factors for the future of the great areas of Barolo. Obviously, soil is so important, but the exposition, are maybe people looking more towards east-facing, southeast-facing as opposed to south-southwest or higher altitude? What are the factors to make more balanced Barolo in the...
yes, in one way, very rarely we have very south... full self-exposure vineyards for Nebbiolo, because Nebbiolo is a variety, as the Pinot Noir, that do not like the direct sun, you know, because if it has too much sun, you get this macerated strawberry that is not good. So south-southeast, south-southwest are always very good. One thing that I think we are more looking is the changing of our viticulture. Because I think, Barolo, there are so many of my colleagues that they are very good farmers, and we are very proactive, and we are, the viticulture today in the last 10 years is very different than it was 20 years ago. We do think in a different way. So we take away not so many deleafing. In the past, there was more tradition to take away leaves before the harvest time. There was more the idea of cutting the top of the vine. Right now we are looking for more shade, to have more shade on the grape. One thing that I was saying is also more green on the soil, because the land of Langa is very white, and if you take away the grass, there is a lot of refraction. So we are looking also to keep a lot of more grass, so there is no refraction. So the sun, when it hit the soil, reflect to the grape. Having grass, we can reduce 3, 4, 5 degrees the temperature of the clusters, and many, many other things.
I've noticed from my first visit to Barolo 14 years ago or so, there's so much more grass all throughout. Just as my personal observation. Have you noticed that other producers are also continuing with this? And it's just been a trend.
Absolutely.
Every time I go, I'm like, oh, maybe there are more people are practicing organic.
Because
I associate the grass with...
We are very happy because today there is many more organic. We mm-hmm. are organic about it. More and more and more, there are more organic producers. More people, they are attention to that. But there is also one reason why. The reason is because it's a profitable business. Let's say, because working vineyard organically, all the things that I said to you, you know, leaving the grass, taking not so much leaves, blah, blah, cost money. And it's something that we can do because it's a profitable business to make wine, to sell grape, you know. Some grape, when you travel to Langa and you see this blue grape hanging down, sometimes it's 3-5 euro a grape hanged there, $3-4 hanged. And this is, if you go to Asti region, is 30 cents instead of 3 euros. So that changed the life. So we can afford these because we have money to do that.
How much more does it cost for the labor for an organic vineyard versus a conventional one?
Minimum is the double.
Double the labor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think it's a responsibility that we have to take because it's very important to protect our soil for the future generation. Plus, I think it's very important also for us because we want to live in a clean environment, you know, like everybody, every business. I don't know if what you do, you wanted to live in a room with clean, pure air, no chemical around, the thing that we want to do. But it costs a fortune. I think Barolo, also because the vineyards are very steep, because we have a lot of rain, and so all the work is supposed to be done by hand. So to make it very simple to the people is thinking about conventional is like if you have taken antibiotics, okay? I take a pills, it work from inside, protect myself for X hour, I am protected. Organic is like if you go to the beach and you put sunscreen for the sun, you take the sun, you have your 50 protection of sunscreen. Beautiful. Then you jump in the water. So it's raining. When you come out from the water, you have to put the sunscreen again. So how many times you jump in the water, how many times it's raining, every time you have to put a sunscreen. So it's a protection from the outside. And so if you do not have too many rain, it's fine. So maybe if you are in some part of Tuscany or south of Italy on a flat land, is more easy. But if you are in a viticulture, not only Barolo, but many wine region that are very steep, everything is done, the cost is a lot.
Is there a crew that you don't currently work with that you would really like to work with?
Now, I feel like, no, that is difficult, because in this moment I feel like a friend of mine said that we, having fun with me, he said, you are like a trainer, basketball trainer, that you have a team of 16 best player of the world from today to the answer, you know, from Michael Jordan to LeBron James or to whatever. You have 15, very well paid, with big ego and fantastic, and you have to choose five or six to play for the game, you know? So I feel very fortunate about that. So I feel almost like, I don't know, in a difficult position for this question. But absolutely, there are some vineyards. One more than other is Vigna Rionda. Vigna Rionda we do not have is a fantastic vineyard. But, you know, I'm very happy from what I have right now. I think we have all the ingredients to have fun.
We'll finish up with an historic question. I know you love to speak about history as well, and we focus so much on what's going on today, but Vietti is one of the most historic wineries in the Barolo region, and for sure a pioneer in quality. And your family was making wine even during World War II time. I know you had some family members who you were telling us earlier who were partisans during that time.
You know, as people, they don't, here, mainly here in America, where you did not had war in, you know, the closest thing that you had from a war was the Twin Tower and everything, you know, 11 September. But there's nothing compared to real war. If you think my village, Castiglione Falletto, for the first war, two-thirds of the boys between 17 and 35 died. You know, you can imagine that this is a war. Plus, when you play the war in your land, when my mother, she was telling me the story of cannon, people shooting and everything, is a war, is a dramatic thing. And then when we have to talk about viticulture and everything, this is, you know, the last thing that you want to do when there is a war. And war, they have a different effect. Yes, my family always, they were, my grandfather was a partisan, so he was fighting against the German and the fascists at the time. Unfortunately, he had a problem because his sister married a guy of a bad guy, a fascist at the time. So when they understood that my grandfather was protecting people from deportation or was helping partisan or was a partisan himself, you know, it was a big drama in the family. But this family store, but like many people, they died. I remember an example, a funny part that there was a Bartolo Mascarello. He was a fantastic person, you know, I think, unbelievable.
He helped partisans.
He was a partisan by himself, if I remember well. And for a long time, he was not selling wine to German tourists because... that, you know, for these poor people, what they have to share, you know, because they were different people, you know, not the same, for sure, they were not. Our region and Italy, but mainly Piemonte and Lange, the partisan, the story, they every family, they had incredible story of the war, mainly from the Second World War, was unbelievable.
I know during that time, the vineyards from your family were forced to be sold off.
Ah, yes.
And I wonder, just hearing you speak about, you know, acquiring new vineyards, small vineyard parcels. I wonder if in some way you're still in the process of bringing everything.
What we lost during the war, 90% is back, let's say. But these new vineyards, they are another story. But there is step a different moment in the life of everybody, in the family, in the business, that, you know, they can change something. Like I said, that our region is so deep of history and culture everywhere in Italy. You know, I think going from Bolzano to Pantelleria, you have so many different wines, so different food, so much different culture, languages, history. You know, for me, Italy is like a beautiful milkshake, not well sedimented. In every place where you put the straw, you have different taste and beautiful taste. This is the beauty of Italy for me.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's a great place to finish. Thank you so much.
No, grazie a te. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Ciao. Ciao, ciao.
That's it for this week's episode. In the Drink is produced by Jesmond Molly of Seaplane Armada. Special thanks to Justin D. Wright for the ad music. If you have any questions or have any suggestions for guests, please feel free to shoot an email over to me at inthedrinkpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.